Hi, this is Katie.
And this is Laura.
And you're listening to the podcast by Parent Network of Western New York. Hello and welcome back, everybody, to the Parent Network Pod.
Today we have Diane Vigrass here to join us, and she's going to help us navigate through some of those ideas that we have around inclusion.
Now, Diane, you have a very impressive resume, and you've been working in education for about 38 years. Could you tell me a little bit more about yourself?
Certainly. My 38 years has been spent all in education. And I started out as a gen ed teacher, went into special education, did some time as a building administrator in a couple of different schools, and then went into a central office superintendent of schools position.
For what district?
That was a Catholic education for the Diocese of Buffalo. After that stint, I did a couple of years with the Model Transition Program, and that led me right here to RSE TASC, which is the Regional Special Education Technical Assistance Support Center.
What is a Special Education School Improvement Specialist? How is that related to RSE TASC?
Yeah, RSE TASC has three different parts to it. One part is regional specialists. There's a behavior specialist, transition, and also special education trainers. Then there's a part two of that, and those are CSSs, Special Education School Improvement Specialists, and that's my job. There are, however, 11 of us across Western New York. There's two in each BOCES plus three in Buffalo City. Then the third part is Community Employment Specialists, and there's three staff members in that too. So we're quite a big organization, and we affect all of Western New York, although the part ones and the part twos, the specialists and the community specialists, go regionally. People in my job are assigned to a district because of their a designation. They need some help or interventions in their special education program.
So plain language-wise, it sounds like the organization that you work with and yourself as a specialist, you are there to help fix problems?
Well, we're there to specifically increase student success, improve student outcomes within their curriculum, in the special ed classrooms, just the systems in general in a district.
So also thinking, like, with my little parent hat on, what is the difference between a CSIS and a CIT, S-E-I-T?
Oh, a CIT is a special education itinerant teacher in early childhood, as a teacher that travels from one location to another. Now, in the realm of special education, you can also be an itinerant teacher going from one building to another building, usually within the same district. And that's what I did for about 7 years as a special education teacher. Back of the car looked like a closet. There was all kinds of materials. Had to squeeze in my kids.
That's great. So if one of my students felt like they were having issues in their school and their school wasn't addressing their learning needs adequately, they can't request a CSIS intervention, can they?
No, that comes from state ed. It's a state ed contract so that a district is designated for their state performance plan. And that's when we are assigned district as specialists, as CSISs. We're assigned a district. The other parts of RSE TASC are ones that give general trainings to the educators and districts across Western New York. CSIS is assigned specific districts to create a strategic plan and help the systems and instruction move to a point where we can help them become sustainable and as they increase the outcomes for students with disability. And then we can walk away.
If we can't request an intervention, how could a parent or an individual get more advice from an expert like you?
Well, the first thing I can think of is my website, ONCTASC, ONSETASC.org.
Which we have linked in the show notes.
Oh, excellent. Some of our websites have a lot of information. For example, we've got a toolkit for progress monitoring. We have some literacy information that parents will find helpful. But the CSIS role is really specifically for educators. You know, some people have called my office and asked for advice or help. And I say, you got to go to Parent Network. We talk the same language. We train on the same things. But in Parent Network's case, they take away the jargon of the education world and make it sure that it's friendly for parents. But that's very important because Parent Network offers so many different kinds of trainings that we do. It's just that it's geared for parents.
I have sat through a lot of Erie One and Owen BOCES workshops, and the information is incredible. And Parent Network has really taken that, and we actually have a conference coming up, the Wildly Engaged Inclusive Classroom. And this is really interactive. I will actually be present, so I'm super stoked to go.
Come meet a podcast celebrity.
Come meet a podcast personality. And our recommended audience for this are really preschool through high school educators, therapists, and parents, because what's better than parent and family engagement? It's going to be Thursday, November 15th, and that's going to be from 8:30 to 3 o'clock. And there will be Julie Costin, who I follow her on Facebook and things like that. She's founder of the Inclusive and Special Education Program in the Department of Teaching and Leadership at Syracuse University. So she's pretty local for, as far as guest speakers come along. I have seen pictures from her conference. She's a repeat offender. She's a comeback kid. She's coming back. We asked for her. And this is in collaboration with Early Childhood Direction Center as well. So if you do want to reserve your spot, early bird is right before October 26th. So go to www.parentnetworkwny.org and you can speak to myself or Lynn to get you registered. We do have that Parent Network link as usual in our show notes.
Diane, as an educator, what are the biggest hurdles that you encounter for creating an inclusive classroom?
I think the top challenge, the top barrier is awareness of disabilities and awareness of how disabilities can impact learning. A lot of professionals just don't have that basic understanding, and it's important that in a strategic plan, that's where we start. We need to develop that awareness, that the empathy for actually, this is how I need to change my instruction for the student with disabilities as well as for anyone, because we all learn a little bit differently. I think that's the number one. Another one would probably be understanding the curriculum, understanding how that can be adapted or accommodated so that a student with disability has complete access to it and success with it too. A learning disability will impact learning significantly or maybe not as significantly, but every student has a way that they learn best, and it could be a style or it could be some other kind of lighting or conditions in the classroom that are affected. So learning styles is a narrow look, mm-hmm. but if you broaden it out into the conditions of learning, for example, how instruction is offered, the environment of the classroom, the physical environment as well as the social environment of the classroom, things like materials, those are things that focus on some accommodations where you get different materials or adapt materials for use. But those are the things that affect or are impacted by a learning disability. And instructors, general education teachers, as well as special education teachers, must understand that about a student with disability and how his or her disability impacts learning.
I'm thinking as an educator, you can kind of get set in your processes and you get your classroom management down, so you see all of those processes as part of your classroom management. So I imagine that when you come in, it sort of disrupts that flow a little bit, but also gets those educators to sort of open their minds to new ideas and new inclusive ideas.
The thing about it is you must know each student, whether disability or not. You must develop a relationship with each student so that you know the strengths and preferences of a student and you know where they're going to run into barriers or challenges. And then you address your instruction in that manner. Yeah, you might have 25 or 30 kids in a class, but that relationship is extremely important to develop between teacher and student so that you can make good instructional decisions.
That was the number one thing I learned in my undergrad when I went for special education was how to, because I was placed especially as a long-term sub in a lot of 811 type classrooms, and that was my favorite advice was, in order to diffuse those behaviors, the number one thing we need to do is know our students. And so I ran into this with my son. He was having some behaviors at school, and I suspected that he needed some reading help. And I asked the teacher what books he was reading, and she's like, well, he's a boy, so I give him baseball, and I give him this, and I give him football. And I look at her, I go, those are all the things he hates. Did he read about spaceships? Did he read about soccer? Did he read about dance? And she had no idea. And this was December to a first grade teacher. And I was devastated last year. So then he wound up being referred for reading recovery. And he's flying and reading every Captain Underpants book under the sun right now because he loves them. But it was very frustrating as a mom. I knew what he loved and I knew what we were able to read at home. But then to watch his passion at home just sink because he wasn't engaged at school. He didn't understand. So what would your advice have been for me then? Like, what could I have done differently so that I didn't get to December and give the death stare to his teacher? Like, what could I have done differently?
I think parents of students with disability must go the extra mile in understanding how the systems in schools work. Definitely advocating for your son or daughter until that son or daughter can advocate for him or himself. And that could be as early as the end of kindergarten or first grade. Don't put that expectation on the shelf just because of an age. So becoming aware of your student's learning difficulties and barriers, that's important. Helping your student become aware so that he can advocate for himself eventually when he's ready. Knowing the systems within the school district, how they work, understanding the special education process, attending your special education CSE meeting, that's so critical. This is where you get a chance to advocate for your student and bring your student with you to help the process. Disability usually is not something that's going to go away. It's going to be something the student lives with all his life. He needs to know how his learning is different and must be able to vocalize what he needs in order to be successful. It carries right over into transitioning into adulthood. You get them ready for them in elementary, middle school, high school, but as soon as they walk across that graduation stage, it's adulthood, and they need to have those skills because there's not going to be somebody following them around to make sure that they are using those skills.
I appreciate hearing that because in one-on-one support, we talk a lot to families about advocacy and especially that continuum of where they're supposed to be. I feel like least restrictive environment and placement are the questions we get the most. We hear a lot of my child is significantly behaviorally higher or cognitively higher. My child is not learning like the other students. And so what can I say when those parents call and they have such least restrictive environment questions, and what would kind of help push that motivation to make sure the child is in an adequate placement?
Again, knowing your child, having the teacher know the child, and also that IEP that's written, the PLEP, the present level of performance at the very beginning, is critical to telling what the student is able to do and what the student is challenged to do. Some of the things that are working, that have proven that they've worked. That IEP is a strategic plan, a one-year strategic plan, making sure that you're keeping an eye on those goals and the progress on those goals. And in the beginning, when those goals are actually set, being at the table to say, ooh, are you sure that that's what we need to do? Or can I suggest something else and another related skill that might be holding him back more?
That's great advice. And I know we touched a lot on many of those different topics, advocacy, present levels of performance, IEPs, self-advocacy, in our first series that you can check out on the podcast.
So I feel a lot better about how I can advocate for my son in the classroom, and I feel a lot better, but I'm still a little confused, and I have the conference coming up. It's a little ways away. What exactly does inclusive mean? So if I'm talking to the team, and I'm sitting around the table, and I'm already feeling intimidated when I'm talking to his teacher, so what should I know about what does inclusivity mean? What does being inclusive mean? What does the inclusive classroom mean?
And your PD, wildly inclusive classroom, that's going to open up all kinds of different ideas. But in general, inclusion looks like a student exactly where he's supposed to be for his level of learning with accommodations to help him be successful within that program. So it might be an amount of time in the general ed session. It might be a part of that time out of the general ed setting into a special class or maybe pull out into a resource room. That's least restrictive environment. But that's decided at the CSE table by the CSE chair with the parent present. Very important. Inclusivity includes the access to the gen ed curriculum, a grade level gen ed curriculum, because it is our understanding that most students with disabilities should have access to that grade level curriculum, and they can meet that grade level curriculum and expectations with the accommodations. But I want to caution, accommodations, it's like a support, it's like a bridge from the gen ed curriculum to where the student already is. And we want to make sure that we don't give that student too many accommodations, because our ultimate goal is to make sure that student is independent. You can't walk across that graduation stage with all of these accommodations, because the world isn't friendly like that. But schools are, and they're entitled to those kinds of things. But you want to make sure you don't create a learner that is so dependent on all of those accommodations that it's detrimental to walking across that graduation stage and achieving success.
Yeah, it's like that carryover of an artificial environment, which we hear a lot of, especially when Tanya is our transition gal here, and she gets that question often of, well, my child graduated with this, but what happens when the bus stops showing up at my house? Which is a very scary, you know, realization. And I think it's often forgot that parents have an input on those post-secondary goals in the IEP. And that's when I get that phone call, and I get really excited when I get a parent phone call who's a child like 13, 14. And I'm like, here we go. The goals are going to start being written at 15. So what is it that you want your child to learn? What is it about this outside world that you want them to know? Is it to ride a bus? Is it how to make change when they're at McDonald's? Or if they're out on a trip with the class, is it just general safety awareness? So I think that that is very important, because I feel like some of our children are just graduating into that artificial world.
I have a grandson who has a disability. He's just entering sixth grade this year. And I was telling my daughter, it's not too soon to start tracking transition. You need to definitely have an eye open on the goals and where that's heading. And no, he doesn't have a clue. He's got like 14 different things that he wants to be when he grows up. But refining that year after year, and also making sure that he's got the executive function skills that he's going to need in order to be successful. Those are the kinds of things that a parent needs to be aware of and help that conversation grow at the CSE table.
We have a workshop called All About Me, and we get to interview your child. And that's my favorite one to facilitate. Tiberius and I just had this conversation in the car yesterday, and that's one of my favorite places to have conversations with him, because he's like, okay, so what does a manager make? What do you mean? How much money does a manager make at what? And he was just telling me how he thinks it's really cool that he could go to college and be a Wegmans cashier and then work in the produce section because mommy teaches him about fruits and vegetables and we take him to all the classes there. And he had a plan. And I said, oh, okay, so where do you, and he's seven.
This is cool.
And he was like, oh, okay. So, and I think facilitating the interview, so to speak, with your child, so that they are able to answer for themselves and say what really drives themselves. Because for a while, Ty wanted to be a barber, and I really didn't know how to facilitate that conversation. So we built from there. And it was because, oddly enough, he would absolutely loved mustaches and wanted to be able to grow, you know, his own. And so we had that conversation. And it's really fun to just let loose a little bit, whether you're a teacher or the professional sitting around that table or the parent, and just have that conversation. You learn so much about your kid.
And you know what also is important for development is self-awareness. That mm-hmm. student needs to become aware of his strengths and his barriers, especially ones that are connected to his disability. That's so fostered by parents, but it's also something that needs to continue inside schools. And that's something to look for in any kind of a school setting, is that fostering of self-awareness, because that's how you get to self-advocacy. That's how you get to be a self-determined young man or young woman and able to meet the challenges of the real world after graduation.
We went from barber to police officer to engineer. I don't know where all that ties in, but that's
probably going to be a teacher. It's fine. This is your moment, Katie. At the end of every episode, I ask you to tie up everything we've covered in a big, shiny purple bow. And I'm going to ask Diane to give you a grade on how you do with our, our cliff notes.
There's no pressure. I have a 3.9 in my master's program right now. Okay, so we talk about, for parents and especially professionals, to have that awareness of the disability of the child or student and to have a general overall acceptance of the differences within their learning styles, within their behavioral patterns, and within their communication. And not really as an overall modification to their day, but how can we support them? What are the supports within the system so that they're not creating this artificial environment so that when a student graduates, so we're looking at them at six, but what are their expectations at 16? And
even though that can be somewhat baffling to a parent to think about that, it's really important that they know what their expectations are, what your child wants to be, and to be lucid in your conversation, to be comfortable with your child, to know that I can ask those questions, because all of these questions and all of these things that I do now create a fantastic overall advocacy for my child when they're an adult. And lastly, what my inclusive classroom is supposed to look like. It's supposed to have equal access. I'm supposed to have equal availability to things that other students, and especially equal access to the curriculum that goes along with what classroom my child is in. How'd I do?
You're a star.
Oh, yeah.
You are a star.
I'm putting a star in my purple phone.
Yeah. Perfect. So, again, to our listeners, all of the resources that we spoke about today, links to the websites, and also registration information for that upcoming workshop, The Wildly Inclusive Classroom, they can be found on our website, which is www.parentnetworkwny.org. Or you can call Katie. What's that number, Katie?
We are Lynn at 716-332-4175. 101 support.
And that's our 101 support line. To wrap up the show, we're going to throw a curveball at you here, Diane.
Uh-oh.
We're going to do what we call blizzard questions. So Katie is going to ask you a series of questions, and you have to just say the first thing that comes to your mind.
Ooh, that's dangerous.
I know. It's going to be fun. And that'll pretty much wrap us up.
Mm-hmm. Okay. On our mark, get set, let's go. Bills or sabers?
Bills.
Chicken wings, drums, or flats?
Drums.
Favorite restaurant in Western New York?
Oh, there's so many.
Top three.
Oh, okay. Carrabba's.
Ooh.
Payne's, North Tonawanda. And any Chinese buffet.
What's like a Mongolian first... down in, off McKinley.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's a good one.
What is the first thing you put on your plate at a Chinese buffet?
The fried rice. Because that is the foundation for everything.
Good answer.
I love it. Fall or winter?
Winter.
It's one continuous season here.
I know.
And then your favorite brewery?
Uh-oh.
Or winery?
I'm a wino.
Okay.
Favorite winery?
Spring Lake out in, must be Medina, well, maybe Lockport area. Oh, yeah.
I'm a Niagara County girl, so I know all that you're talking about. I think my favorite one was Honeymoon.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That was a good one. Well, thank you. It's been a big pleasure. I mean, you're fantastic, and I appreciate all your knowledge.
It has been my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Make sure to join us next week.
Thank you for joining us. I'm Katie.
And I'm Laura. This podcast is presented to you by Parent Network of Western New York, supporting families and professionals to empower individuals with disabilities to reach their full potential.
Join us again next time, and in the meantime, check out our website, www.parentnetworkwny.org.